If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So, Dave, we gave away these Carlsberg tickets today for the Football Republic. We did like a competition in London, Leicester Square. We were like, come down, get the tickets with a passphrase. It's going to be amazing, you know, all this sort of stuff. So this guy called Harry turns up. Me and Lawrence are there, the Cheeky Sport boys, Rob as well from TFR, Sophie from Chelsea Fan Channel. We've got confetti cannons ready to go. I've got mine pointed up in the air. I'm ready to pop it off into the air as Harry walks in. Harry runs in. I pop it off. I got it the wrong way round.
And it goes straight to
my, you know, the area, if you know what I mean. The crown jewels.
Oh dear. Are you all right? Did you have to go to hospital about that?
No. Luckily, it was just confetti. So it's not the most powerful thing that could hit you there. But it luckily got edited out of the video. I think I styled it out. I think I just looked quite surprised in the video. I'm like, what the fuck is that? I jumped in. It's all good. I mean, it could happen to anyone, Lawrence.
It could happen to anyone. It just so happens anyone that Adam could get fired.
It just so happened I fired one into my. I mean, anyone can get a very simple, rudimentary confetti cannon wrong.
I mean, essentially, it doesn't tell you which way to. Oh, wait a minute.
But I mean, in essence, it's 50-50 whether you're going to fire out the wrong way, the right way. You know what I mean? It's 50-50 chance, flipping a coin.
And unfortunately, you fired a confetti cannon right into your balls. So.
It's a day I'll never forget.
I solidly cried, I'd say, with laughter.
You struggled to compose yourself.
Just before I was back. I'd say for about 2 minutes.
Embarrassing story.
It was just the vision of Adam firing a confetti cannon into his own balls.
If I can find the footage, I will put it on the Front Free Twitter account for all to enjoy and ridicule me. Bye. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that was my Wednesday.
Mine too.
It's Wednesday, which means it's time for the Front Three with me, Adam Bolt, with the one and only Lawrence McKenna.
Welcome back.
And of course, the stat man himself, Dave O'Brien.
Oh, thanks for coming again.
Thank you very much for listening. Lovely to see you back. I was obviously off on the weekend, off in the Emerald Isle, beautiful island.
And then you went to Ireland,
Make the podcast. But it's lovely to be back. I had some nice comments, some nice people sending me some adapted Paul Simon lyrics, which I have to say I appreciate. James Mole, I should say, if you will be my bodyguard, I'll be your fanny.
Good. That's a very good one. And it would be even better if they said, I will be a long lost fanny.
Yeah, I mean, he's got it all wrong. Haman M definitely got with the gist of it. He said, if you be my bodyguard, I'll be your long lost potch.
Good.
Crying face. Nice.
Good.
Rishabh Singh has gone for a bit of a long form one. If you'll be my Hazard, I can be your long lost form. I can call you Messi, and Messi, when you call me, you can call me a liar.
Oh, very good. Excellent headline. I mean, that's almost worthy of working for the Sun.
And Alfredo Arnace said, if you'll be my bodyguard, I can be your long lost Paul Gascoigne. P.S. Good. Please don't call me Al. So there you have it.
Clever.
Lovely comment.
Very clever. See, that's why we did it, Adam. People like music and they like football.
And they like bullying you as well, Boltwood, for not showing up.
All we've got to do is we're trying to give you incentives not to not be on the podcast. There's a massive incentive to not miss a podcast. Because if you do, you're basically
couldn't have. It's the in-laws, isn't it? I can't avoid.
Do you miss dinner with the in-laws, or do you miss?
I can't say to Shona's 82-year-old granddad, I'm doing a podcast, mate. I can't come to your birthday party. One, it'll be like, what's a podcast? Two, it'll be like.
Two, you could say, mate, here's an iPod.
Do you want to be on?
Yeah.
Yeah, do you want to come on, mate?
Special guest this week.
Special guest this week, all the way from Ireland.
Don't have any problems, mate.
Anyway, let's get on with the podcast then. First off, comment of the week, as always. A lovely review here from One Money on iTunes. If you want to be up with a chance being comment of the week, get on iTunes, leave that review, leave that rating. Money's gone for good football podcast with Lawrence nutmegging all the institutions on the left wing, Dave whipping in the stats and the bant from the right, and Adam nodding in the facts. The front three are certainly the most dangerous front line in the football podcast world.
Oof, when they can read things, they are, yeah.
Five stars, though. He said it was a good football podcast, but he gave it five stars. So
credit. I mean, if he thinks that's good, God, just imagine.
Fair play. Yeah. Guys, let's get into the news. There's been some pretty big news today. Mm. Gary Neville has been sacked after less than 4 months in charge of Valencia. Only won 10 games in 28, which is...
What's that as a percentage? That's low. That's below 50.
It's definitely low. Valencia, you know, I can understand why they got rid of Neville, but anyway, he released a statement saying, I would have liked to continue the work that I started, but I understand that we are in the business based on results. And in 28 games, we have seen 10 wins, 7 draws, and 11 defeats, which is not the level demanded by me or this club. Dave. Right. It feels harsh, but at the same time, almost unavoidable. It wasn't going to last any longer than this summer anyway. It wasn't going to last beyond the end of the season, so it's almost like, why not just get rid of him now?
Yeah, it's a fair point. It's just it's interesting how poorly he's done. Obviously, it's a big challenge going to Valencia, not speaking Spanish. You know, we said that when he came, but he sort of has failed tactically. Valencia, you know, when I've ever seen them, they've been absolutely awful. They've looked so disjointed. They're not playing to their strengths. It seems like they've got quite a few English-style players. You know, the two lads they've got up front, Paco and Negredo, could go with the front two. You know, play a target man, just hit the ball to Negredo and go. And they've got two. You know, they've got energetic midfielders in there, Parejo, Gomez. It just seems like he was trying a bit too much. He was playing like a 4-5-1 that was a very deep 4-5-1 with the build-up out the back so slow. So un-Gary Neville-esque when you talk about how he likes football. You know, he talks about how he likes the rock and roll football, how he fell in love with that Borussia Dortmund team. And this was so far from that side. It was ridiculous. You know, you've got some very, very good players in there. Pablo Piatek, Cheryshev. These are players that are decent for Gouli, but they all just look so bang out of form and so, like, a little bit uninteresting in a way. You know, Santi Mina probably, you could say, was the only sort of standing light of this terrible, terrible time. But poor Gary Neville has failed in his first managerial job.
I mean, do you think it's a good move from Valencia, Lawrence, seeing as, I mean, they're 6 points above the relegation zone now, 8 games left to play.
That's kind of the
point. Yes, Valencia only won one of the last five in the league, but it's not the ideal time to suddenly change manager and bring that upheaval.
What I mean, how far are they off the relegation zone now? That, you know, they're
6 points.
Literally, six points above the relegation zone. Obviously, there's no point saying no club is too big to go down, but at the same time, I think there are worse clubs in La Liga, so, you know, they don't see themselves in as much danger as I'd imagine people want to paint it. Basically, you know, it was a good experience for him. I think the problem that Valencia hit with it was that they weren't really employing a manager with a track record. And so whilst it looked great from Gary's side, and if things could have just sort of coasted, that would have been fantastic. But it wasn't the way that it went. And so, you know, the decision makes sense. And in Spain, I mean, you know, apparently there's a celebration this weekend in Spain, and they were literally burning effigies of the owner and Gary Neville. That's worrying.
That's when you know things are bad.
That's when you know it's bad. I mean, you thought waving handkerchiefs was bad. I mean, it's nothing when they're burning effigies of you because you play 4-5-1.
We're talking there, Dave mentioned there about, you know, Neville's mistakes almost in tactically in terms of the way he played. But, I mean, we said, and everyone said, when he took that job, Lawrence, that it's one of the most difficult jobs in European football. He's now the 16th manager to have been sacked or moved on.
They do expect a very good...
In the last 16 years.
Yeah, they expect a very good class of football, I think, even if it's not... you know, the style isn't always sort of the most incredible. You know, they really still respect Rafa Benitez there for what he did in his time at the club. You know, I think they had some basically some expectations that they... Essentially, they're a bit of a... It's hard to put them on level. not a they're a sort of a Liverpool or a Newcastle level club, if you like. If you're looking for sort of reference point, you don't know La Liga so well. They're big team. They have a very high expectations and almost expectations which mean that the club have to perform there or they consider it not to be success. And so that's the issue there, is that there was very little patience for Gary. And I think with the lack of patience and, you know, also obviously newspapers wanting to sell papers. And I also think, Dave, at times, some really big chances missed from their key guys. They basically didn't conspire to work for him. But at the same time, I don't feel like he's lost a lot.
I wouldn't say he's lost a lot. It's a good experience, obviously, managing a club of the size of Valencia.
Yeah.
The thing that you've got to question, though, there's a lot of teams that are sort of really overperforming their resource in La Liga this season. Villarreal, Celta Vigo, Athletic Club, that you could all say they've done very well. Ibar, you know, that little great fellow that came on our podcast. And it's just interesting to see Valencia, who actually have, resource-wise, have a lot, and they've spent quite a bit of money recently, but it seems like they're buying all the wrong players. Again, it seems like a ship without a captain in a way, where they're sailing in a direction, but they're signing all these players for X amount of cash. You know, Peter Lim is the owner, and he's a billionaire. So they can spend the money. You know, signing Negredo. Negredo was quality at Sevilla, and he was really good, in my opinion, at Manchester City. I was pretty surprised. He did go on a bad run of form, then sort of like got booted out of the club, in a way. You know, you've got the right components to be really competitive. You know, you look at how Athletic Bilbao play. They play a very English style. Adderley's up front. They get the ball wide. They cross it or they go direct to him. Why not do the same with Valencia? It just, and that sort of, you know, that will go against so many teams. That will beat the classic Spanish teams in the league that play a classic Spanish style, playing direct English football. They won't see that coming, but it seems like Gary Neville, it's a little bit like England in a way, how they're so poor out the back. They're so poor out of building up out the back. And I feel that potentially the Valencia side and the England side have that same characteristic of being too slow out the back and taking too much time.
I did find it unusual that sort of Benitez, for that reason, didn't wait. I mean, because it just seems like the almost perfect mix again of Benitez going back to Valencia, saving the club. There must be a reason why he didn't go back there. And it seems a little bit like the poison chalice, which you could say there are equivalents in the Premier League and equivalents in a lot of league two right now.
Well, Dave, where do you think it leaves Neville then? I think you mentioned there that you don't think it does much damage to him. Obviously, he's going to be going to the Euros with England in his coaching role. But do you think this has hurt his reputation in England at all? Do you think he sort of lessens the chances of getting a job in the Premier League or the Championship?
To say that he's got to go down the leagues, you know, you look at someone like Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank that had taken Burton Albion like massively up the league. And I think he's got to do something like that because his record, you know, is definitely been tarnished by this. You know, can he go back on Sky Sports and put the same opinion across? Yes, and he should be able to do that. But there were people that were mocking, but then he's going to have to take that, and it's going to have to be, you know, he's going to have to come through this and deal with the mocking. But I feel like getting a job at a lower league team, where obviously Hasselbank's already moved on from Burton Albion after doing a great job there to QPR. He's got to do the same sort of steps. He's got to go down to maybe League Two, and then he's got to see if he can coach and see if he can mix it with in that style of football and build himself back up. And I feel that's the only way he's got to go. He's got to go back to learning the basics. You know, he was thrown at the top. It's like you sort of, you know, you've just left university and now you're MD of a bank. That's kind of what he's done. So he needs to go back and go through the exec and the whatever and the, you know, all the steps of banking and sort of slowly build himself up. Work on his philosophy, his style, because it seems like he's going two separate ways. You know, trying to be the gegenpressing style manager, but then also trying to build out really slow out the back. He's got to either speed one of those up or go down the other route. And it feels like he's got a lot of sort of soul searching to do. But then maybe he doesn't even want to be a manager. You know, he said on that documentary about Salford City on the BBC that he doesn't really see himself as a manager long term. He potentially sees himself more as an owner. But that question is, why did he take it in the first place? It just seems like a really funny decision for Neville, for Valencia, for Peter Lim. And potentially that could have tarnished that relationship, because obviously Peter Lim's a big shareholder in Salford.
Yeah.
I do also think, though, that Gary Neville's a bit of an old school character within football. And I think he sees football as not only a business, even though he's trying to run one on the documentary and also trying to interact with one at Valencia. I also think he sees it as somewhat of an exercise and a thought, almost a thought exercise. And so with that, I think that was partly what he was doing at Valencia, was looking into his experiences there, what he could do at Valencia, what he was going to do there, how he was going to achieve it, and what it meant to be at a bigger club like in La Liga. So I do think there's some academic validity to what he's trying to do. So like this thought, whatever you want to call it, thought trial that he went on while he was at Valencia and basically tried out a lot of different ideas or tried to do something there. I think it makes sense to me. And to some extent, I can respect that because it's not always about the business or the bottom line for me. And to some extent, you can understand Peter Lim seeing the same, being a billionaire and knowing that maybe he wanted to cut his losses. Maybe he just didn't think it would be so bad.
I'll tell you who's a bad record for Lou, Philip Neville.
Yeah, poor Phil.
Is he ever going to get an assistant manager job again? Obviously, failed at United, failed at Valencia. What has he got left?
Dave, that sounds very harsh.
I don't know. I just think that, you know, I don't think that he also doesn't suit management, or maybe doesn't suit being an assistant manager. Maybe he'll suit a coaching role, but I feel maybe he needs time again. He needs time to work on his trade, and he feels that he's jumped in a bit too fast.
Maybe. I mean, basically, I feel sorry because very often I think the press are very quick to move in. I feel like the press will comment very quickly when they know very little about the situation. I think Dave's right in his analysis. He didn't achieve maybe what the club set out to do. But I also think, you know, reputation-wise, there's very little that Gary had to lose. And he can basically go back to he can go back to his job on Sky or come back to England with a relatively untarnished reputation. And imagine there'll be a lot of people who back him up as well.
Be great to see if he does go on back on Monday Night Football. I think Jamie Carragher is going to have some fun.
He will roast it.
every time he sort of criticises someone's defending him.
You can't be playing 4-5-1. Well, Gary.
Oh, okay, Gary.
Funny you say that, Gary, because when you played 4-5-1, Gary, it turns out that you were pretty shitty at Gary.
He's going to bring up that 7-0 thumping in the Copa del Rey about 5,000 times.
That's going to come up a lot. Another manager who obviously lost his job this week, though, Dave, was Remy Gard. Some saying he was always a poor fit for Aston Villa, but it's hard to put too much of the blame on him when the club are in such disarray, really.
Yeah, it's a crazy one. Obviously, they appointed him post Tim Sherwood. Tim Sherwood, you know, isn't the greatest manager of all time. But I still feel that Villa squad was talented enough at the start of the season to get them playing the right style and to integrate those players. They could have done well in the league. You know, you look at someone like Idrissi Gueye that, in terms of turning over the ball, only Conte's done that more in Europe's top five leagues in the last two seasons, you know, tackles and interceptions. I think he's only 81 behind Conte, and Conte is an absolute machine at that. You know, players like Jordan Avai, if he hadn't got injured, he was looked really good at left back. Mm-hmm. But the thing with Remy Gard is that he came to the club and then they didn't let him spend any money in January. With this, like, you know, with this, the big holes in the side, you know, players like Mika Richards that didn't work again in England. You've got Julian Lescott that's more bothered about what his car looks like.
Oh, just Dave, feels come that, on, that's reductionist.
That is reductionist, but what I mean is it's poor. You know, his performances were poor on the pitch. Everyone saw that. They very, were, very but, poor yeah, performance. Yeah, yeah. I was just trying to throw a little bit of Billy banter in there, shot me down.
Yeah, but Billy, Billy's not always down for banter, Dave. Sometimes he's Simon Sirius.
And okay, sorry, Simon.
It's also that why would you employ someone who's clearly a Wolves fan? It just makes no sense.
it is interesting, as Dave points out, that they didn't really back him in the transfer market. I mean, as you mentioned, they sort of sold four of their best players in the summer.
Yeah.
And they didn't try to recruit anyone to replace them in the summer or in January.
No, the point would be in the summer, I think they did actually try and recruit.
Yeah, I think they didn't do too bad.
But what they did entrust that youth with essentially someone who's just graduated from university. And so
they're not almost not adequate replacements. I mean, how important was Benteke for them last season?
Yes.
Well, who have they really filled the gap with?
That's quite an interesting one. Obviously, Gusted was the one that they filled that gap with. Gusted had a cracking goal scoring record.
He was cracking under Sherwood.
And it's interesting to see, you know, players that have come up from the Championship recently have done quite well in the Premier League. So Gusted's kind of one of the only ones that's gone against that trend. You know, we think of Agallo, Deeney, you know, Jamie Vardy, This is one of the biggest ones that's flopped in a way. You know, he went for a lot of money and he had the right sort of attributes in a way. You know, a big striker, good in the air, scored a lot of goals with his head. And I think it was he had a record amount of goals in his head in the Championship the last season he was there. Obviously, it would be a decent fit to replace Benteke, but it didn't work out. And that was their big sort of spend in the forward line. So potentially that could have been an area where they could have definitely adjusted in January 100%. You know, think of the payment package. You've got to think about that. You've got to like go all in January, especially with a new manager. Just Randy Lerner, what is he doing?
I think Randy Lerner's learned a lot in that time. You know, it's very clear and the headlines have been out that he's lost a lot of money on the club at this point, something like £100,000 a day. I can't remember if it was £100,000 a day, £100,000 a week. Either way, that doesn't seem like a great operating cost for anyone. But without wishing to sound too preachy about it, is sort of, I think they learned too much too late at Aston Villa. And I think they took a lot of things for granted that at the very top level, the way that people operate will sort of continue. And I do think that a lot of people let them down because it was assumed that those people were as invested as maybe Randy Lerner assumed they were, etc. And I think basically they came into contact with a club or a culture which was about, you know, oh, well, you know, I'll come and play out my final days here, or this could be my next chance. Didn't work out. Okay, well, I'll coast until the end of the season and then see what happens from there. I think Aston Villa have been somewhat sold up the water, and the fans, especially the people who feel sorry for, again.
That's the thing, isn't it? Because they're obviously, they are a big club, and, you know, they've got a relatively impressive history. I mean, Lawrence, you've spoken before about how you think it's kind of a shame almost that they're going down, that they'll be missed.
Yeah, of course. I mean, Aston Villa is a huge institution, especially in the Midlands. So why would you not miss?
You worry for them, though, going into the Championship about how if they can bounce back straight away and get promotion the following season. It depends who comes in, I guess, in the last few games. It'd be interesting Nigel Pearson come in, eh? He did a job last season. Maybe.
Just to really punish the players. Just let Mike make Nigel Pearson come in.
Leicester bottom this stage last year, eight games.
I think
they
were, actually, you know, because there was that stat not long ago, a year ago, was it the 23rd of March, which is basically starting into the international break. Leicester were 20th in the league.
I think even he'd struggle.
Find out. I mean, Pearson must be considering it, but he must also be thinking, you know, why would I go and basically prove that it was a one-off and actually I'm not as good as everyone keeps saying I am? Why would he do that?
Imagine if he did, though. Imagine if Super Nige comes to Villa, wins every single game, eight on the bounce.
The thing about Villa is...
Even then, they're still going down.
Yeah.
Surely the frustrating thing about Villa is just how poorly run they've been through the years. And was it Gerard Houllier was there? Alex McLeish, which was just a ridiculous appointment. Paul Lambert, who just, you know, failed completely. And then Tim Sherwood, seemed a bizarre appointment at the time. Remy Gard hasn't worked out. You know, you wouldn't trust them to make the right appointment and to get themselves back into the Premier League.
The question is, where do they go now? Who do they go with? They go with someone that they believe can work with this squad, or do they put a bit of investment in to bring the squad sort of a Championship level? Because even say this squad doesn't look equipped to battle in the Championship. They look lightweight. They look like they don't have very much in midfield to be able to combat whatever the opposition are putting towards them. No protection for the back line. The back line seems to be very disparate, doesn't seem to have very much organisation to it. And whatever they're doing at the very front isn't geared towards a Championship style of football. It doesn't seem to be geared towards any style of football. So they need someone who's going to come in and give them something to get them back up into the Premier League. Because it's also, and I think a lot of Aston Villa fans have made this point, it's the worst season they could have gone down. Because had they stayed up one more season, at least they got that money investment. At least they got something there that could have said, you know, this is what's going to keep us up. This investment, this is what's going to set us apart from the Championship. No, not anymore. Mm.
What about for Gard, Dave? Because we're talking there about how Valencia's short time at Valencia may have impacted his reputation. Obviously, Gard's been there for 5 months at Villa. Do you think he's going to be someone who's hit by this experience?
I think he could play the sort of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer card at Cardiff. Got a crazy owner. nothing I could do about it in any job interviews. Apparently, he's already got his profile back up on LinkedIn looking for new roles in football. But what you know about Gard is that his roles have come from, from youth academies. He was at Lyon through their youth academy for a long time, did a lot of good work there. You know, players like Lacazette and Titi are all a sort of players that came through the youth academy with Gard, and then he brought them into the side. So he's got a very good, you know, history of developing young players, and I think that's what Villa wanted. But then they realised that they actually had a bit of a shitstorm to deal with before they can go and, you know, think about the future and, you know, deal with players like Jack Grealish. Again, someone that's kind of, been forgotten about, but could be, you know, arguably could have, you know, carried this Villa side to safety if he wasn't misguided or stupid or whatever you want to call it. You know, very, very good player. You know, people saying he could be the next big thing in England. You know, did he have a debut for England, or was I mistaken here? They played for the under-21s, but he had performed very well there, and then, you know, just goes out of his mates on the piss after the Everton game. That starts the, it's sort of, you start to think that dressing room doesn't really care at all. And then again, going back to that Lescott thing, dressing room don't care. There's no one there that's fighting. There's no one there that's, you know, have a punch with each other because the performance isn't there. And you kind of need that. In when you're in a relegation scrap, you need people to scrap. And I don't, you know, there's no fighters in that Villa team.
Speaking of don't care, the international break was obviously happening over the last week or so. England, very impressive against Germany. A fantastic comeback to win 3-2. Less impressive losing to Holland, Lawrence. The defence being picked out as the main weakness for England. John Stones copping a lot of the criticism. Has to be said that although the squad for England does look quite promising in attack and obviously in midfield, the defence is maybe not that good at actually defending.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of talk over the last week about who should go. You know, obviously we did our own video. We've put that up. That's going up on Yahoo over the next couple of days. And people have, on every fucking channel, have done their thoughts on the same 23 men who are going to the tournament. And we've all put our slight variations in and bored each other senseless. And, you know, that's fine. But I think we've taken something interesting away from the Germany game. That, you know, practically England have ability. They can apply it. Is that going to be consistent? Is that application going to be able to be consistent at a tournament? And is it almost what I'm saying is there's a lot of people who sort of go, you know, well, this guy's got, you know, John Stones has got to go, or Cahill's got to go. Cahill's got to be the captain. These sort of things. We saw between Germany and the Netherlands is basically the best and the worst of what could happen at a tournament. Is that when England do well, they'll perform against a side who weren't playing particularly well come the second half. When they do badly, then they can be very much taken advantage of. And a tournament is the peak of both of those. And it's that tournament environment where that's where England tend to suffer. We always get our hopes up. We always talk about doing And there's a lovely conversation on the Football Ramble this week. I can't recommend enough going to listen to it. It's a 20-minute discussion about the England squad, about who they're putting together, and about why the expectation, those sort of things, play into even the construction of a squad. It's well worth a listen. And you know, I can really highly recommend it. Those four guys know a lot about supporting England. They've travelled all around the world with them. So it's frustrating, but at the same time, it's been enjoyable. Thanks for all the good times. Let's just cancel the tournament.
Assessment of England then, from those two games?
Well, I think it you know, sort of weighs with something that I mentioned on one of the videos, is how England should play football. You look at the two games and you see that England are playing on the counter-attack against Germany. Again, they started poorly. I thought England were very, very poor for the first 60 minutes. Thought they were, Toni Kroos ran the show, nobody got near him. They sat far too deep. They didn't press England, press Germany in the right areas when there was opportunity. And then they sort of changed up. You know, they went to a diamond. They started to, you know, they started to trouble Germany centrally. Jamie Vardy is a big, big player for England. Obviously a massive player for Leicester City, but he gives England a lot as well with his pressing, with his ability to get into the channels. But then, you know, they go on to win the game, you know, a pretty decent performance in the second half, you know, the second half of the second half, you'd say. But then against Holland, when they have to dictate the play, they're very poor at it. They get caught on the counter-attack. They make mistakes, you know. Very unfortunate, John Stones is now getting too much criticism. Again, this happens in the media that, you know, one player makes one mistake, he slips over. That wasn't the phase that England conceded the goal. The phase that they conceded was this phase afterwards. Yes, John Stones made the mistake. Yes, that opened up the opportunity, but England didn't react to that. And yes, he's been pulled apart for it, but if you look at the amount of passes that he plays forward into areas that are accurate, like the ball to Theo Walcott against Holland, that was absolutely exquisite. You want someone like that in your squad. The problem is, he needs to cut out those slips, and that's it. That's all he needs to do is stay on his feet. Wear some studs. That would be quite interesting to know what boots he was wearing that day, because that isn't the first time that John Stones has slipped this season. Maybe that's something he has to look at. Just change your boots. Simply as that. And then you eradicate that error. You eradicate that, you know, the big hype on him. But I think with John Stones, he's got the composure to be a really top centre-half. And we don't want to forget that. He's 21 years old. He's got to... Yes, he has to physically develop. He's got to get bigger. It's crazy. It's crazy that the media just flips on it. Yeah, get out now. Again, I wouldn't start John Stones. But that's because I'd set England...
A few weeks ago. Jeez.
Exactly. You know, but then that's it, isn't it? That's the media.
You could write it both ways, though. I mean, you could say... So, media narrative can go... Either way, you could go, thank God he got all his mistakes out pre-tournament. Great, now he can go to the tournament, he's learned his lesson, blah, blah, blah. Or you go, ooh, that's terrible for the tournament. It's however you want to string someone up, and it's basically how they want to sell papers. The idea is, between footballers, practical and the actual application of your ideas and your theories. That's where Gary Neville went wrong, that's where Remy Gard and Aston Villa have gone wrong, and that's sometimes where England go wrong. And you'd say that there's a reason why we keep coming back to the media and the way that they treat the England squad is because it changes the way that fans approach them, and it changes the way that we support our team. And I think, you know, the point is again made on the ramble, it's about what you expect from that side. So if we expect, if we expect them to win the tournament, maybe we're the idiots.
Let's talk about another team who impressed over the international break, and that is France, of course. I think the lesson that maybe we've learned from that, Lawrence, is that their squad has got incredible depth in it. I mean, we've seen Dimitri Payet and N'Golo Kanté sort of making their first starts for the French team, sort of breaking through into that squad, impressing in the most recent game. And these are not even players that are considered, you know, automatic starters.
First team, yeah, exactly, yeah. I also think, obviously, that there's other things to be said for that, in that, you know, they've not played in the tournament, they've not been in the squad for a particularly long time. Are they facing the kind of challenges that maybe they'll face at a tournament? Is it the kind of pressure that maybe they'll be facing at a tournament? No. So practically, there are questions there. But consistently, those guys seem to have delivered when the pressure's been on them in the Premier League. And, you know, so are the other players within the French team. When you look at that side, there is also, I think, and this is the point, is that we were talking about being tactically adaptable at a tournament, and England having to adapt around other sides. There's so much aggression within that French side. You know, do you want to put Griezmann there, or do you want to put Giroud there, or do you want to put the Pogboom there, or, you know, do you want to go with someone who allows your formation to be aggressive? I like that side because it's so sort of outwardly, you know, you see where the danger is, but it's difficult to stop. It's, you know, it's like watching that Dimitri Payet free kick the other night. It's like, great, stop it. Oh, you can't.
That's the thing going forward. You mentioned some of the names there. Griezmann, Kingsley Coman as well, Ben Arthur, who's been fantastic. He's obviously Payet, Anthony Martial, Karim Benzema, Alexandre Lacazette. Very good going forward. But Dave, there have been some question marks again about France at the back. It looked like they got a strong team on paper. I mean, we're looking at Sacco, Varane, Koscielny in the middle there. Obviously, Evra, Digne on the left, Sanya on the right. Those are where the question marks are being asked. This may be the weakness of this team, who for many are the favourites to win the whole thing.
I think, again, they've got a little bit of Arsenal-itis about their back four. Ooh. They don't have any real leaders in there leaders central, I think. I think they've got Patrice Evra there, who definitely is a leader, but I feel you need someone in there. I feel that Varane and Koscielny, they don't strike me as someone that would be commanding and would, you know, sort of boss everyone around, and everyone sort of respects middle way. I feel that obviously with Evra and Sagna at fullback, they two older players that have got more experience. You know, you see the Netherlands game. What I liked about France is their transition from attacking to defence looked quite good. They were playing sort of a 4-3-3, you'd say, with who was sitting in the middle? Olivier Giroud, then Griezmann on the right, and then Payet on the left-hand side, with a central midfield of Matuidi, Pogba and Lastiara holding. How that sort of transitioned into a defensive structure was it went to two banks of four, which I love in this you know, current era in football. That's the strongest way to go, with two forwards up there, gives you the counter-attacking.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Gives you the control of the space between the lines and so forth. So what happened there was Pogba would shuffle out to the right wing position, Lastiara would hold one central midfield position, Matuidi the other one, and then Payet was filling in. So it looked very, very good in that sort of, the shape looked good, which was, you know, I was very impressed about that. I didn't think that you know, the French team would do that. I thought they'd be quite disjoint, you know, three attackers staying up top because they didn't want to track back. But the issues came when they were dealing with set pieces. You know, they conceded a very, very poor goal from a wide area. Memphis Depay whipped in a half-decent ball. They got a flick onto it. It was a handball, but someone's got to take control of those situations, of those set pieces. Then the second goal that they conceded was a cross that was pretty much driven. It was like a pass into the penalty area that was side-footed home. You know, something that you can deal with, a set piece that's pulled to the edge of the area that you should be stopping. Someone's got to pick that up. Someone's got to stop that ball. So with France, it's that organisation at the back, both in set pieces and when they're defending, I feel that they've got to get a bit of control for. They've got to make, you know, they've got to give someone the leadership. You know, Sacco came and played in the second game against Russia with Varane. Again, Varane, Sacco, is there anyone there that's going to command? I don't think so. So that's the only big concern, is that France don't have a strong lead in the middle. But they did look very, very good. They looked, every time they were attacking in the first half against Netherlands, they looked like they were going to score a goal. You know, Griezmann was getting opportunities to get shots away. Payet looks absolutely awesome in the French colours. And then they've got either Giroud, who's been half decent, then Gignac, who's top scorer in Mexico this season. So they've got enough quality there to really... And then Kingsley Coman, you know, that's the depth. There's so many different types of players there, you know, inside forwards, wingers, very, very quick players, players that are going to come to the ball, players that are going to go away from the ball. And I think that's the beauty of the French line. And then the midfield is quality. So it's just that defence and just getting that organisation sorted, and they'll win the Euros.
That new kit is lovely. Ooh. As well. Both their new kits are
really nice. Yeah. It is very, very nice.
Yeah,
I'm coming around to the England kit as well. What about you? Still not too sure about the socks.
But I think it makes them look big. That's what I like. It makes them look very broad. You know, like Jamie Vardy's, he's on his way to being built, but he's still a bit of a skinny little English boy, isn't he?
Big fan of the Germany kit as well. Yeah. Love that sort of classic
Home and away.
Speaking of which, another interesting game over the international break. Germany beating Italy 4-1, looking quite comfortable. But there are a few sort of question marks over their squad. Lawrence, obviously the captain, Bastian Schweinsteiger, looks like he could miss the Euros. Gundogan sort of picked up a little knock. Goetze played, obviously, but people aren't sure whether he's going to be in the team. Obviously, the world champions, they're going into this tournament not as the favourites, because obviously France have taken that position, which we've already spoken about. Talk to me a little bit about Germany and what you think their sort of chances are going into this tournament after those friendlies.
Obviously, they're going as the reputation of a world champion. Yeah. And I think, though, the point would be that reputation, I think even Jogi Löw has sort of referenced it in certain interviews, where he's basically said, you know, had we not scored that goal, the perception of us as a squad would be quite different. You know, the almost runs, those sorts of things. And I do think the German side, and sometimes the German press, can play into that. There's a soft underbelly to this really impressive German team. I think basically their goal is, again, going to be get to the final and then not try and snatch a similar result, but basically play a game which plays into their strengths, which is so much individual skill, which allows them to place emphasis on certain parts of the pitch and basically play around the other team.
Dave, still on Germany, obviously. Question marks, I said, you know, the right back spot, Philipp Lahm, since he's retired, they haven't quite found.
Mate, I disagree, thank you. Emre Can, so.
Come on, man. No, you're right. Him against England, mate.
Like I said, I haven't found
it, man. Were any of those goals conceded from his side?
I do, but that's, I think positionally he looks a bit. He's not a right back, is he? He's left footed.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That, although,
why would you play? I don't understand why he's played at left back in his career for Leverkusen, but he's never played right back yet. They're playing him at right. I don't know.
It
seems like a crazy thing.
It's unusual.
That could be. That could obviously be a weak point. If you know Jerome Boateng finds form, you'd say Boateng and Hummels in the middle is a very strong partnership. The midfield is obviously very strong. A lot of options there. But again, for Germany, a lot of people question up front whether that's the area where they have a deficiency. I mean, Mario Gomez obviously plays for Germany. We've obviously got Thomas Müller who can fill in up there. I mean, where do you think Germany need to improve, Dave?
Well, I think they definitely need to go back to the 4-3-3 that they sort of played more in the World Cup, you'd say, with Thomas Müller through the middle. And then, you know, either Ertzil, Draxler, Royce, whoever you want to play out wide, just play them out wide. But I feel that system worked for them. At the moment, they look a little bit too gung-ho in a way. You know, they against Italy, yeah, they did absolutely cream them. But Italy were playing a 3-4-3. They were experimented. Darmian was playing centre-half. You know, they didn't have their first-choice back line in a way. Midfield, Thiago Motta and Montolivo. You know, will he play that in the tournament? Probably not. So it was an experimental team from Conte. With Germany playing Goetz up front with Ertzil off him, I don't mind that. But I feel that it just with Thomas Müller through the middle, it gives you a hell of a lot. It really does. His movement, his ability, you know, he's just really... Thomas Müller's one of those players where he gets to an international tournament and he takes himself to that next level. I don't quite see that in European football all the time. You know, we see him at very, very good level, but it's internationally, it seems to just switch on for him. His movement gets better, his finishing is very, very clinical. He's a clinical player, but I think it is getting a holding midfield in there for Germany that's going to allow them to push their fullbacks on. Two central midfielders in there, you know, Kruse and a partner, whoever. And then obviously that right-back slot, you know, I'd go with potentially getting Ginter in there. Rudiger's played that position. You know, Jerome Boateng could even play right-back if necessary. So I feel they've just got to get the right blend. But I think with Germany, these friendlies mean absolutely nothing. You know, through the years, Germany have been very, very poor. Pre-tournament, they've been poor. They've been very inconsistent. They'll win one, they'll lose one. Win the one, they'll lose them. They had a terrible record before the World Cup. I think they were they'd lost two on the bounce before the tournament started, and then they just switched it on. So I feel it's that. It's getting that blend of players into the side, and which ones you want to pick, which ones you want to leave out, and having that sort of defensive stability by dropping one of your attacking midfielders and adding in someone that's a central midfielder.
Looks like it's going to be Antonio Conte's final tournament as Italy manager. It's never been confirmed yet, unless I'm going crazy. It's not been confirmed he's Chelsea manager yet, right?
No, it's not.
It's just the worst kept secret in football. Yes. Obviously, their squad
apart from the whole Jose Mourinho secret, but yeah.
Yeah, that one.
Or the Jim Mikayla secret, but that's a whole other secret.
Obviously, their squad is not as strong as it once was, but what sort of challenges is Conte facing going into this one?
I think he's trying to find a blend of bringing youthful players in, playing players like Bernadeschi, playing players like Insignia, getting them blended into the side in the right position and playing the right system. You know, he's a big fan of the three at the back. We all know that. I feel again he should go back to the 3-5-2. It's served Italy so well in the past and it can do it again. But it's where Insignia is going to play, whether he's going to play off a striker. Whether it be, you know, Graziano Pella, maybe. Pella's a really interesting player in the Premier League where he goes through big runs of form and then he doesn't score for like 2 months. But at the moment, obviously, he likes to score at the start of the season. Then he has his mid-period where he's chilling out, Christmas time, has a few pies. Then he's back in form again around March time. And, you know, if he can continue that form to the Euros, Pella could be a sort of really interesting striker for them. I think bringing in like Jorginho as well from Napoli could be quite big. El Shaarawy, you know, he's been looking really good at Roma. So it's just going to be interesting to see which Italy team he starts in the first game, to be honest, because at the moment we know pretty much nothing from what he's doing because he's just experimenting.
Sorry, I dropped out there.
Okay.
Sorry, the connection dropped out there. should we move on to some transfer talk? I'll introduce you properly.
No.
Let's move on to some baseless transfer talk, Dave. Looks like Granit Xhaka is going to Arsenal. £35.3 million deal. This one's in build, actually, so it's probably not that baseless.
Yeah, it's there, mate. It's done. It's converted, isn't it?
Surely it makes sense. They need signings. Flamini, Arteta, Riziki coming to the end of their contracts this summer. Get Xhaka in, £35 million. Wenger said he's going to be there next season. Bish, bash, bosh.
Yeah, The Blind, the Bild, sorry, it's pretty much the Sun in Germany. They've got good connections in Bayern Munich. They broke the Mario Götze news before it came out, which was quite interesting. But this one, for me, I don't think it's on at all. He's a competitive central midfielder. He makes a lot of tackles, plays quite sensible passes, completes a lot of passes in games. He's got a bit of a poor disciplinary record this season. He's 6 yellow cards, picked up 3 red cards. He's been massively, massively outshadowed this season by Dahoud in midfield, the 19-year-old Gladbach central midfielder that pretty much is running the show. He's the next big cheese, and it seems like Granit Xhaka's coming to the end of his life cycle at Gladbach in a way, and it's time for him to move on. So he will move on, but I just don't think it'll be Arsenal. I don't think it just doesn't look like a right fit for me for Arsenal for a central midfielder. It's not the classic Wenger player. Someone with a bit of bite.
Dave. It's in the Metro as well.
I know, but they're probably quoting the same paper, and there's a big chain of paper, and there's some dude that's had a laugh on Twitter, and you know how it is. But he's a good player, and if he does get into the Arsenal team, it'll bring some bite, it'll bring something. But is he the right player to take them to the next level? I'd say no.
Interesting. Some other sort of transfer tattle, Lawrence.
Yeah.
A few question marks over Thibaut Courtois. Now, some people saying, some newspapers, namely the Evening Standard, saying that Real Madrid are going to come in with a huge offer. Mm-hmm. 73 million is the fee being quoted. And I've seen a few Chelsea fans turn on Courtois. They're not happy with his behaviour this season. He's come out of a few choice quotes in the last few weeks. One blaming
truth
Mourinho.
Hurts.
Sometimes the truth does hurt, but maybe the truth, it can be relayed more tactfully in the media, and I think he's given off a certain reputation. Someone asked him if he's going to be at Chelsea next season. He's like, oh, I can't say yes, I can't say no. Fans don't want to hear that. They want to hear, I'm dedicated to the cause, I'm sticking with this team. That sort of uncertainty, I've seen the Chelsea fans turn against him, and they want to see the back of him now. They see him as ungrateful, and they'll take that 73 million.
And then who are they replacing with? Ter Stegen?
Tasman Begovic, mate.
Of course.
Begovic is absolutely top class, mate. He's been a more than adequate backup. Let's just buy a Petr Cech back as well. Why not?
Awesome.
I wouldn't even want to go back to to Chelsea. That looks like a folly now, doesn't it? That looks like a slightly short-term thinking.
I suppose so, yeah. I mean, that is part of the problem is that, again, one of the reasons why maybe he doesn't feel particularly committed to Chelsea was because they basically loaned him out when he was younger. Took him to another place and basically said, look how good Spain is. And he was like, yeah.
And now he doesn't feel that sense of loyalty.
Well, yeah, I mean, why would you to a club that's shown you none?
They did, you know, they sort of let him, not let him, but they sort of loaned him out to Atletico Madrid. He became the first choice there, but they sort of brought him back, said, we are going to sell one of the most experienced goalkeepers, most successful goalkeepers, greatest goalkeepers we've ever had in order to make you our number one.
Yeah.
And this is the thanks they get.
Well, I mean, yeah, but I mean, at the same time, you know, I guess that's the point with the Chelsea system isn't seem particularly smooth. The problems at the club and people not being very comfortable, just in general, the culture at Chelsea overall doesn't seem very conducive to it. You know, overall, you can't really blame him for wanting to leave because it doesn't look like they're going to win the Premier League next season, even if they do have Conte. I mean, it would be very surprising if when they had Conte, they did that.
Is that the problem then, though? Incredibly, for a team that won the league last season, players who are there, obviously they're not going to be in the Champions League next season. As you say, it's hard to see them challenging next season.
Yeah.
That all of a sudden Chelsea don't have the long-term appeal that maybe Arsenal, maybe even Spurs have.
But Arsenal, Spurs, I imagine there are certain players who want to work with Conte. City, Manchester United, maybe even West Ham at this point. I mean, you know, what's the difference between going to Chelsea and West Ham? If West Ham are promising investment, they can invest. They've had a lot of good players go to the side recently. It depends on the way they deal with it over the summer. And they're going to a brand new stadium.
Interestingly, if Thibaut Courtois does leave, the man has been linked with a move to Stamford Bridge is Gianluigi Donnarumma. The young AC Milan goalkeeper, only 17. Only 17 years old. Agent claims he's worth £119 million, which seems steep, I'll admit. but reports are that with Milan making a huge loss last year, they are willing to sell off their prize asset in order to get some of that sweet, sweet dollar.
Adam, we know how much you like dollar, mate.
Adam loves dollar. Adam, dollar is, I think, if we don't call you Adam Dollar Boltwood from now on, I'll be a long lost man.
I prefer the word bunt. Spend any time with Barnaby from Spurred on YouTube. Great channel. Go subscribe. He says the word bunts 20 times a day, meaning money, and it becomes infectious. But Milan want that bunt, Dave. So can you see their 17-year-old goalkeeper, who I've had the pleasure of watching him live this season. I mean, not to humble brag or anything like that.
Right, well, don't.
Doesn't look like a 17-year-old teenager. He looks like an incredibly confident, incredibly commanding presence in the box.
How much though, Adam, in your personal opinion, having seen him live, is he a clean sheet Calvin?
Oh, I love these alliterative names we've got. Clean sheet Calvin.
How many clean sheet Calvins would you give him out of five?
Dave, we're not three playing a rumour rater. But 3.5?
Yeah.
3.5? No, I think there's no point in selling him. Why would you sell your prized asset? You know, Milan want to go back to the top.
I've already said that. Dave.
Come on. No, they don't need the money at the moment. I think they just need to get solid again. You know, they need these young players to come through.
€1 million loss last year.
I know, but they need to hold on to someone like him. He's too good. He's too good to let your prized asset go. That's come through. What, in the last like 5 to 10 years, they haven't really had anything coming through. Now they've got this big cheese. You don't want to let him go. You know, he's so good. His ability, his reaction saves are fantastic. His reach is incredible. He looks decent on the ball. He just looks like a fine goalkeeper. And they'd be crazy to sell him. Absolutely crazy.
Similarly. Everton would be crazy to sell Romelu Lukaku. Wouldn't you agree, Dave? 50 million is the sort of price that's being thrown about. He's another player who sort of opened up his future question mark, saying he wants to play in the Champions League next season. Obviously, Everton aren't going to achieve that this term. We've spoken about him before. We've spoken about how promising he is and how he's, you know, one of the few players to score, was it more than 50 goals in his first under the age of 23?
Yeah.
Do you think quickly that it is the right move for him to leave Everton, that maybe this team doesn't match the ambition for his talent almost?
Well, I heard from Steve down the pub that Juve had, you know, Juve's agents had been in town speaking to young Lukaku. But no, I think it's, I hate to say this, but it's probably the right time to move. You know, he's scored 60 goals in the Premier League now. In the last four seasons, only Aguero scored more goals than him. Someone like Juventus would be perfect for him. You know, a club that's got young players going together. But obviously, any Premier League side would want him. He'd work at Liverpool, United, City, Arsenal, Chelsea. Imagine if he went back to Chelsea. That'd be well funny. That'd be the ultimate, like, Tottenham. You know, if Harry Kane goes to Real Madrid for $135 million, ship 50 of that for Lukaku and you're laughing. But no, he's a top quality player. He's improved this season on his touch and his passing. I thought last season he was awful. Like sometimes they'd fire the ball into him and his first touch the ball would just fly off his toe, or you know the ball would come into him and then he'd play a silly pass and they'd lose possession. But he's improved that this season, and he's improved in his finishing even more than he already had. You know, he's becoming clinical, becoming more of a physical player. You know, he's always had the attributes, but now he's using those attributes. He's using his ability to jump and head the ball and you know, connect with a shot and really crack it. So he's going to be the big one this summer, I think. He's going to, you know, you could save 70 million, couldn't you, for Lukaku?
Oof. I mean, he's got everything. I think, as you point out there, he has got all of the assets, which make him so valuable. What about a little bit about Goetze, Lawrence?
Good.
Heavily linked to a move to Liverpool. Even Sky Sports are getting in on this act. They're saying that he wants to be reunited with Klopp. So it must be true.
Yeah.
Some people say he's the missing piece. This is the perfect move. Others, less sold on that idea.
Yeah, I mean, he's been out for quite some time. Not through any reason, but mainly because he's just sort of fallen out of favour. I think, you know, it makes sense that they would sort of look to move him on at this point. Although you'd say with Pep moving on and them looking to, you know, reconstruct a squad and maybe sort of upgrade things after he leaves, it would make sense if they were to basically say, why don't you stay for another season and just see how it works out.
stay for another season.
Yeah.
I suppose with Carlo Ancelotti coming in, you know, when he arrived at Bayern Munich, it was sort of a massive fanfare from the great rival Borussia Dortmund. At Pep Guardiola, it hasn't quite worked out, but as you say, maybe another season is the way to do it. But he's available for as little as 15, 20 million because his contract is sort of ending at the end of next season. So you can see Liverpool paid, what was it, 32 million for Benteke. They're going to try and push this deal through.
Yeah. No, I understand what you're saying. I also think, obviously, the pull of working with Klopp again and sort of working alongside coming towards his peak, Coutinho coming towards his peak, another striker maybe that they get, maybe works with Daniel Sturridge. You know, being part of one of the heroes that constructs this side, I think would be fantastic for him. It's also what he brings to Liverpool. You know, I think he shows his collaborative teamwork play, all those sorts of things are exactly what Liverpool need. My only worry is that if Götze comes, what happens to the position of Coutinho? I think the problem is that's looking at Liverpool with the model that it is now. And I think Klopp is going to look to construct or reconstruct some of that over the summer. And then we'll have a better idea of where someone like Götze will probably fit in. At the moment, I think he'd fit perfectly. But it's sort of how you see that overall playing out over a season.
Shall we finish this week's podcast with a few little strange stories that are floating around the world of football?
There's been some floaters, haven't there, this week?
Some floaters. Lawrence, talk to me about why Lionel Messi has angered Egyptian MPs. Is it just because he's a terrible, terrible person?
I've never seen Messi do anything good on or off the football pitch.
Yeah.
You know, I think he's
this may back up your assertion there, Lawrence. Have you heard the story about how when Pep Guardiola was at Barcelona, he tried to, you know, be strict with the players and sort of, you know, get everyone very regimented and instill some discipline? And he apparently said to Messi, you know, no more fizzy drinks. That's it. You can't be drinking Coke, Pepsi, any of that sort of stuff. No more. Messi went, okay, boss. Walked out the changing room, went to a vending machine, got a can of Pepsi, walked back into the changing room, opened it up and drank the whole thing in front of him in one go.
Oof, wow.
To say, I'm the boss, mate. I'm in charge here.
Yeah, yeah. And also to say, they pay me $50 million a year. Are you mental?
That's sweet buns. But this move, that's quite a dickish move. But I mean, this, if true.
If true, which, by the way, sounds this completely move, untrue. This when anyone tells stories like that, apart from Zlatan, it sounds completely untrue.
Hey, I think it was our good friend Gallagher who came out with that one, so make that one.
Well, maybe it is true then, yeah.
Interestingly enough, apparently Guardiola got the control over Messi by allowing Messi to go to the Olympics. And missed the first few La Liga games. Messi obviously wanted to go to the Olympics. He wants to win everything he can. And first Guardiola turned around and said, no, you're not going. You know, you're doing training with me. Yeah, we've got this big game that's coming up in La Liga. You've got to be there. Obviously, Messi threw an absolute sulk. And then Guardiola eventually decided to let him go, obviously missing the first few La Liga games. Barcelona went on a little bit bad run of form at that start of the point, but it got that control. And I think it got a bit of faith from Messi back into Guardiola. So, you know, both of those things, it's really interesting that Messi is a footballer, you know, as a person in a way. It's interesting that as a top manager, you've got to do certain things to allow certain players to drink that kind of Pepsi if they fancy it.
Well, yeah, there's got to be a reason why. I mean, there is also that headline. It is pretty funny. There's the headline of, who was it over the last week that's been told he can't eat any more Nutella? Nutella football. Let me look it up. Player.
Looking that up, also apparently Messi had to give up pizza. He used to love just pizzas as a post-match meal, and apparently, he used to wash it down with a can of Sprite, which is probably not the best meal for an athlete.
I could go probably for hasn't pizza got all the
apparently pizza's good, high in calories. So they tell them to eat pizza now.
Pizza?
Yes, they do, yeah, after the game, because they basically want to get the calories back in their system as quick as possible.
Sure, there's a better way. than
they might be, Adam.
Pure cheese pizza.
I was going to say, there's got to be, I mean, you're surrounded by good, like, you know, proper energy professionals, and they're going, just get core pizza hut, just get it up, mate. Super supreme. Yeah.
If you're a real athlete, you will get a large Domino's after this match. That's what the real athletes do. That's going to be my excuse from now on.
Maybe it
when
is.
When I play five a side, I'm just going to go straight down to Domino's, mate, get a full extra large can of Sprite. Messi does it, so it must be all right.
This is what I'm imagining is in like, you know, in like, you know, Siena or somewhere like that, the health and the old, you know, the physio is just an old woman. She's going, it's okay. It do my son good. It do you good. You replace all the calorie with the calorie. You're not a fat bastard. You're a lovely little man. And all the players are just like, I'm serious. I really don't think we need pizza after match. Anyway, Max Kruse at Wolfsburg.
Fantastic impression. Fantastic impression.
Beautiful. Yeah, I do a very good impression of old Italians. He's done a lot of weird things, but the club, basically, there's a lot of articles claiming that he was addicted to Nutella. I don't think it's actually true, or however the hell they found this out. But basically, they told him, you know, get off the Nutella. He's had quite a few problems. I mean, he's been dropped from the Germany team. There are problems with obviously gambling as well. And then the whole
did he get fined last week?
I think he got
for the gambling.
Yeah, I think he did get fined
for Wolfsburg
for the gambling. And I think overall he's just going through a bit of a formative period in German football where people seem to basically be saying to him, "Don't eat Nutella, don't gamble, don't shout at people in clubs, and you'll definitely won't get dropped from the squad." But obviously he was by Jogi Löw over the past week, so not the best time for him to be dropped because obviously this is one of the last opportunities to impress pre-tournament.
That messy story that I mentioned there was backed up by a leaked team menu, which showed, you know, which each member of the team eats for their post-match meal. Apparently, Gerard Piqué is a fan of the Nutella as well. His choice was Nutella sandwich. That's what he used to eat.
Nutella is apparently, I mean, anything with nuts in is apparently good. I mean, you know, apparently one of the best ways to start the day is apparently with a glass of water and, you know, like a scoop of peanut butter or something. So.
And a bit of Nutella. Javier Mascherano used to love a little pasta salad. He's a fan of the pasta salads.
You're just going
to
go through the whole menu now?
No, just a few. Sergio Roberto loves a bit of sushi.
Oh.
A little bit of sushi there. And of course, Messi is cheese pizza. The food of the gods, famously.
Of course, he donated his boots over the last week to an Egyptian TV show. and when an MP of Egypt, and I think someone else who's involved in the Egyptian FA basically said, found out about this. They said, boots? We don't need boots. This is. It was a bit like, you know, the scene in Zoolander where the guy shows him the model of the school.
Yeah,
they're gonna
that's exactly what it's like.
Was this a school for ants? It was kind of like... So, boots? We do not need shoes in this country. Does he think that we need shoes? And they were like, no. He's just donating them. They're probably worth a lot of money.
Here's the quote. Messi donated his boots for a charity auction.
The thing is, he didn't even donate them for a charity auction. Apparently, the show collects them and then says that they will auction them off for charity. They don't stipulate the charity. They don't stipulate whether it's going to go to Egypt or anywhere. They literally just take a possession of the player and say, can we use it for charitable purposes?
The television presenter Saeed Hassissin said, whose shoes do you want to sell, Messi? How much do you think it will get? You don't know that the nail of a baby Egyptian is worth more than your shoes. Keep your shoes to yourself. Messi, we Egyptians are 90 million people who have pride. We have shoes. We don't eat off the money of other people's shoes. I would have understood it if he donated Barcelona's uniform to the Egyptians. It's accepted, but just the shoes?
Just imagine he's this really in the same tone as, what is this? A school for ants?
What is this? I mean, I feel like he's taking it the wrong way. It's not an insulting gesture, I would say. But
no, I mean, not only that, but then I think Mido, you know, obviously famous Egyptian Mido, tweeted back that one of the most valuable things that a player can obviously earn or have are their boots because they're, you know, the instruments or the implements with which they play. So he was sort of saying it's a great honour to get someone's boots. Yeah, either way, I guess. I mean, I'm looking on eBay right now. You can get one Neymar boot and one Messi boot signed for just under $1,000. That's a lot of shoes.
Speaking of misspent money, Martin De Michaelis has been hit with an FA misconduct charge, Dave, after racking up 12 alleged betting offences in 1 week. What has this guy been up to?
Maybe he was on the lash, wasn't he? Maybe he just had a week on the booze and 12 the down to the betting shop.
Dave, I would say that's libelous, Dave. Five. So I don't think that's true.
Allegedly.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
No, there's not even allegedly. There's nothing to do with what
I'm just making it up. I'm completely making it up. I'm just saying what potentially could have happened. You know, he had a few lagers, got a bit giddy, went down the pub.
Do you want to put a bet on, Michael? Dave, just because you have to make everything sort of alliterative in football doesn't mean he's Demichelis the drunk, all right? It does.
Lawrence, mate, though. Demichelis, you're not a drunk. We're not saying that about you.
Not saying that.
No, we definitely not.
Bit of a weird one. Bit of a weird one, I'd say. He's got until the 5th of April at 5 p.m. to respond to the charges. There's no suggestion that it relates to any of the league and cup games in which City have featured this season, which is kind of what people have been suggesting.
What is it related to then?
Apparently it's not related to City games, so I'm not saying it's to do with match fixing with him personally.
Sure.
Allegedly. Let's just throw in allegedly there, so we're covered. Final story, I want to talk a little bit about Kaká, Lawrence.
Yeah.
He has admitted that he still can't work out how Liverpool won the 2005 Champions League.
It's 11 years ago.
He literally cannot understand what the hell is going on.
Yeah.
He's haunted and perplexed by the win. He said, honestly, years later, I still can't understand how we managed to lose that game. We had the best defenders in the world in that team. Our back four was Cafu, Yapstam, Alessandro Nesta and Paolo Maldini, but we're still letting 3 goals in 6 minutes. I feel like he's having a breakdown.
And Vladimir Smica scored a long distance strike
to just add insult to injury.
I mean, Kaká also set up, I'd say, one of the greatest goals in Champions League final ever. I mean, that the beautiful the ball for the second. Crespo didn't even need to touch it. It was basically a perfect through ball. Crespo hits it with the outside of his boot and it just sort of sails over Dudek perfectly. If you are them, you would think, why? I think when you hear the Liverpool players tell it, they're going to tell it in a different way. They're going to say, you know, we saw Gattuso patting the Champions League trophy as they walked out onto the pitch, and apparently Carragher gave a little look across to one of the other players. It's very unlucky to obviously touch the trophy before you win it. And where Carragher says when he saw that, they sort of knew that no matter what happened on that night, you know, that they would go, you know, they'd go on to win it. So, yeah, I think that year things just seemed to align for Liverpool. Poor Kaká, though, because, you know, that was one of the greatest Champions League teams of all time. You know, they had some great quads and threes within that up front. They had some of the best players. Kaká was fantastic within that side. You know, I think it was also peak Ancelotti, really, wasn't it? You know, that's even before Ibrahimovic and the rest of those guys turned up. This was before it essentially became the bastardized AC Milan that we know now. This was like pure Milan, if you like. And it was great. And, you know, even worse, I suppose, to them is that, you know, Dido was at the back. You know,
he was really good for those years. Dido was one of the best keepers in Europe.
I mean, he was prone to a mistake.
Evolution legend.
He is. he was definitely prone to a mistake from time to time. But, I mean, within that time, he was... Yeah, he was basically one of the most informed goalkeepers. If he was one of the least sort of mentally stable.
It's quite interesting. It's like that's the thing with Brazilian goalkeepers, isn't it? Julio Cesar had a great end to the first decade in the 2000s, where, you know, Inter Milan, he was unbeatable. But then, like, what, probably a year after, he just started bottling it, couldn't catch.
That's all about the hands.
End the podcast on that note. I mean, fitting time to end it than there. We've been going for an hour, right?
Probably. Yeah.
Probably. I've been keeping track of time. It's all right. Guys, it's been a pleasure to be speaking to you. Lawrence, thank you for joining us. Transformative Wednesday evening for me. Where can the good people find you if they want to see all of your thoughts in 140 characters or less?
Go to Twitter, type in LOZCAST.
And David O'Brien?
Well, thank you for having me as always, Adam. It's been a pleasure. And you, Lawrence, you know,
thank you, Dave.
I go to Twitter, I'm going to type in LOZCAST and then click follow to find all my best work.
Good, yes. SQUAWKADAVE.
Let's end on the words of Gary Goals himself at Days of 1996, who said, "The front three podcast without Adam Bulwood is like porn without sound."
Yeah, very interesting. Very interesting indeed.
Very interesting indeed. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for listening. We'll see you on Saturday for the Q.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
A podcast I, for one, cannot wait. Have a great week.